Garcia. We are back for another edition of My Thai Happy Hour. We got John back in the studio.
Thank God.
We've got Gabe to my right. Yeah, you're right. Come here, come here, come here. You can say hi to everybody. Just get up to the microphone, say hi. Hi, good. He's got these Spider-Man headphones on.
Love it.
It's gonna be an interesting week tonight. For some reason, John felt that because I gave Suicide Squad a good review last week, that gives him carte blanche to make me review like every DC property.
I lured you into a false sense of security with Suicide Squad.
Stinking up the TV airwaves. But, you know, I gave it a chance. I gave them both a chance, and we're going to talk about it a little bit later. What else do we have in store for everybody?
So, Season 3 of Titans just dropped on HBO Max. Season 2 of Stargirl just dropped on the CW, so we definitely got some thoughts on that. George, more so than I. Joey Cape just put out a brand new album called A Good Year to Forget. We both gave it a listen. We've definitely got some thoughts. And finally, you know, in the press and everywhere else, Brendan Fraser's been getting such love from everybody. He's kind of in a renaissance now, and I think it's great. So I was like, you know, how long has it been since we've seen The Mummy? We're going to talk about one of the greatest action movies ever made, Brendan Fraser in The Mummy.
Yeah, if I'd found out there was a documentary called Brendan coming up,
I'd watch
it. I would watch it. I would assume he's been Val Kilmer. Like, I had no idea he still existed as a human. I'm not the biggest Brendan Fraser fan outside of Encino Man. We'll talk about that a little later. But first, cocktail me.
Well, in honor of The Mummy and how we're going to talk about The Mummy later, I thought I'd find a mummy cocktail online. Let me tell you know, one of the big problems, I'll make a little sidebar here, that I have with finding recipes online, because yes, you did give me that amazing recipe book. However, I don't want to just read every recipe out of that book, because, you know, I want people to buy the book. But also, you know, I want to change it up a little bit. I want to stay on theme with some of the recipes. But the problem with finding recipes online sometimes is that half the links go to Pinterest, which doesn't really help me. The other half of the links, it's just like, well, we're going to talk in depth about what our feelings are on this recipe, and we're going to have a bunch of pop-ups and click-throughs before you actually get to the recipe. And it's the same thing with food recipes. If you're trying to forget trying to make anything nowadays and finding a recipe online, you've got to read a person's entire life story before they break up how to cook the damn thing throughout like 3-4 thumb swipes up. It's infuriating. But this is called The Mummy. This recipe is a super easy one. 2 ounces of vodka, 1 ounce of triple sec, 1 tablespoon of lemon juice, just 1 tablespoon. Make sure it's freshly squeezed either way. So you're going to mix all the ingredients in an old-fashioned glass, half filled with ice, and then you're going to top it off with a club soda. It's light. It's refreshing. It's almost going to have an off-white bandage color like a mummy's bandages. The Mummy, the cocktail recipe for you from me and some website on the internet.
So you haven't said anything tonight, which means you do not know the news yet.
No, I have been in a hole. Like, I was on. Well, actually, I was in with my girlfriend in Salem on vacation.
No. I mean today's news.
Yeah, I haven't been on Twitter either for a while. So.
We have breaking news.
Oh, what happened?
Breaking news.
Who's dead?
HBO Max has just announced the streamer ordered 10 episodes to start of Fiona and Cake, Adventure Time Returns.
Oh, what? Really? You better not be messing with me, bro, because I'm so sad.
This is the Hollywood Reporter. Variety also reported HBO Max has given a series order to a spinoff to the Cartoon Network favorite Adventure Time. The streamer has ordered Fiona and Cake, an adult animated series following the sword-wielding adventurers Fiona and her magical best friend and talking cat Cake. Here's the official description of the series, which will have the working title Adventure Time, Fiona and Cake. Fiona and Cake, with the help of former Ice King Simon Petrikov, embark on a multiverse-hopping adventure and journey of self-discovery, all the while a powerful new antagonist, determined to track them down and erase them from existence, lurks in the shadows.
Shut up and take my money. So let me tell you, HBO Max is a very expensive service comparative, you know, to other streaming services. However, they keep bringing the heat. They keep bringing the action with first day releases on HBO, with Adventure Time cartoons, with this new Adventure Time cartoon. I mean, like, you know, Titans and all my DC programs are popping up there now. I can't quit you, HBO Max, and I've tried.
So I said it. I knew something was up if these one-hour specials they've been doing for the last year, they've done three of four one-hour specials involving different characters, what happened to them after and before the main story took place. We've reviewed them on the show. You know Distant Lands. And there's one more coming up very soon starring Peppermint Butler.
Peppermint Butler, people.
I felt like this, and I'm active on the Reddit Adventure Time board.
I love this.
It's very active.
I love
that,
this.
Like all day long, that thing just has artwork. And like it's a lot of kids that like grew up watching it as children. Not like us who were like adults when it came out. We're adults still. These are kids that grew up that are now adults and like still love this show. Like it's the greatest thing that ever happened to them. So I knew if there was even a little bit of a spark there, they could do it. I thought I rewatched the episode, the last one with Jake and Finn going to heaven, hell, death land.
Yeah.
And the ending was like this, you know, Adventure Time for now. Which made me think that they were either going to reboot or they were going to be reborn as something else or something. And there are a lot of stories out there that Fiona and Kate could be Finn and Jake. What's the word for it?
Reincarnated. Love it.
So
on great with the mummy talk.
Great idea. You know, if anybody out there, you know, we love Adventure Time. It's on HBO Max, the entire 400 episode run, whatever it is. Gabe is rewatching. It's one of Gabe's favorite cartoons, that and Rick and Morty. And it's my fault. When he was a very young baby, when he was one year old and we would just have this little sack, that's when you told me, you gotta watch Adventure Time, you gotta watch Rick and Morty. So for my paternity leave and time that I had, I would watch those because I knew he wanted to see animation, but I wanted something I could enjoy. And at the time, swearing wasn't a thing. Like, you know, he didn't know what swearing was. So Rick and Morty now, but now he's become, it's like ingrained in him. He loves Adventure Time and Rick and Morty more than any other cartoon, more than Muppet, maybe, more than anything. Like, and solar opposites only because he thinks it's Rick and Morty.
Yeah.
And because he hears Rick's voice in the show. So I'm both a terrible parent, I guess a great parent, because he loves Adventure Time. So Fiona and Cake is coming. This is the female and cat version of Finn and Jake, who are a boy and a dog. In this case, it will be a lady and a cat. And they've had reoccurring appearances in sidebars of the main show.
You know, one of the great things about Adventure Time, and I will maintain this statement, is that they did an amazing job building the world out. But they also did a job, and it's an incredible job, of like building out other branches of the world that if they ever needed to spin the show off, you could spin it off six ways from Sunday and still have it be a satisfying experience. And Fiona and Cake are prime examples of that. So I'm, you know, obviously all in on this. My second thought is, you know, I know he loves Rick and Morty, but I'm still yet to see him running around yelling out, Teddy Rick! Or like any of like the catchphrases from the show. So I think you're safe in that thing. My other thought is that, you know, I think you should give Regular Show a shot. Because to me, Regular Show kind of was that halfway between Rick and Morty and Adventure Time. And I mean, it's not as fantasy and whimsy as Adventure Time, but like the humor is there, the jokes are there, and it kind of takes those like side tangent paths that are really funny, and like it finds ways to have the story pay off in the end. Also on HBO Max, I can't quit you, HBO Max, and HBO Max just added the Venture Brothers. So my girlfriend and I finished Bob's Burgers from front to back, and now when we have breakfast, we watch the Venture Brothers again. We're watching the Venture Brothers again from the beginning, and I'm like, man, talk about a show where a lot of stuff that they say, because it started, I think, in like 2002. Holy crap, you could not get away with those jokes in like even the last 5 years. Like, it was even at a point where, like, I think South Park stopped telling that kind of style of humor that, like, I heard it and I laughed and I'm like, oh no, you can't, you want to kind of sweep season one under the rug because they say some shit.
South Park, and I've been rewatching some South Park too. South Park. Always knows how to, like, if the boundaries have been pushed to where you can't push anymore, they find new boundaries to push.
Yeah.
So they'll find, if something's been canceled, they'll find something else until it gets canceled. Like, they are very good at just the, you know, pushing the obscene. I mean, it's really
still psychology. You push and take a powder, and then you bring it back as a callback later when it's been long enough that you can tell the joke again. Such clever ways of telling stories.
Well, the thing about South Park is, as bad as it was, you always knew that the people doing the bad stuff were bad people. Mm-hmm. So I felt like they always had the out where even if they do stuff that is not appropriate today, it's not them doing it. They're making fun of the people doing it. So that's how I think I got away with that. You know what I can't get away with? Getting the hour of Titans back that you made me lose last night.
Yeah.
So Titans – I've known, like, this was the DC show where, look, everybody loves the Teen Titans. Teen Titans is possibly the only thing great about DC other than the new Suicide Squad movie. It is a cartoon on the Cartoon Network, now on HBO Max, that's just really good. It's very much the Powerpuff Girls, but with the Teen Titans. And it's young versions of our favorite Justice League people and their sidekicks, whatever. This is Titans. This is like, oh, we got the chance to do a live-action Titans instead of doing what, like, Disney does and just make, like, a live-action version of what kids like. You're going to make it, like, the first letter, like, fuck Batman. Like,
yeah,
this is the dark Titans that nobody asked for.
Everything that I hated about it at first, because, I mean, if you whatever episode that was, probably 100 episodes ago at this point, everything I hated about it at first, I've kind of, like, learned to, like, embrace and enjoy. And it's weird because so this is the story on the world that it exists in of the Teen Titans, how they fell apart, how they came back together. And now they are Titans because except for certain members, they are no longer teens. And it brings in a lot of fan favorite villains from the DC extended universe. I don't even know what it is anymore. And we're going to get to that in a second with not knowing what it is. And also, you know, Bruce Wayne pops up. It's a very self-contained thing. And I was hate watching it at first because I was doing a thing back then when it first aired, because this is season 3, everybody, where I didn't really respect my own time. So I would just be like, well, even if I'm not really enjoying this, I have to watch it to completion. And that was season 1 of Titans. But by the end of season 1 of Titans, I was like kind of being like, when it was coming back for season 2, because this initially was the DC streaming service that got folded into something that got folded into something now is folded into HBO Max. I was like, oh, maybe I'll see. How are they going to get out of this one? I mean, I'll just watch. I had nothing to do that day. And then I went from hate watching it to actually watching it to halfway through season 2, kind of enjoying it, and now being excited about season 3, which, in fairness, would not have happened if I was respecting my time back when this had come out. Because now, if I'm not enjoying something, I will bail on it. I will not finish it because there's only so many hours in the day that we have. However, this takes up... after a chaotic last battle in the end of season 2, they're picking up the pieces of their team, recovering from the death of certain team members. The world is a mess. And the acting is what it is.
The acting is horrible.
Yeah.
It is horrible. Ser Jorah from Game of Thrones plays Batman in this. He's the knight who was Daenerys Stormborn's, like, both guardian, and he's the one who stabbed her in the back, but not really. Whatever. He got, like, the dragon, whatever, the dragon scale.
Yep.
He was good in Game of Thrones. He is not good here. Nobody is good here. The acting is so bad in this, and I guess it's because you've been watching long enough, so you kind of have, like, the callus. Like, the callus on your ass from riding the Peloton that you're going to get eventually.
Yeah.
This is one of the stupidest shows I've seen. It starts off, I'm just going to ruin it for everybody.
Go for it.
Because I don't really care. I mean, it opens up, like, the Robin, the modern, like, Robin, the Robin that dies in Death in the Family, which is one of the most horrible, Jason Todd, one of the worst Robins ever, where we all called up that 800 hotline and asked for him to be killed, and they did in the comic books. They kill him in the first, like, 5 minutes of this season, and it's not really enjoyable because not only is he a douchebag like he is in the comic book, he's also, like, a drug addict who's a drug dealer who's created this new drug, who is, like this drug, and he's, like, so badass now with the drug that he's going to go and fight the Joker, and the Joker kills him, and I have zero sympathy because he was kind of an asshole in the first 5 minutes.
I'll be very honest with you. I've already figured out the entire season. They telegraphed it from the start. I already know how the season ends, but I'm enjoying watching it. So they dropped 3 episodes if you're interested in this television show. I know we're not, half of us isn't really selling this on you, but they dropped the first 3 episodes. I always got to say I appreciate when a new season kicks off. Give me those first 3 episodes, man.
Yeah.
Give me those first 3 episodes. Let me watch this kind of mini movie, little thing, and kind of catch up on my programs, because it really is. It's a DC Comics soap opera where they say the word fuck a lot and you see some side titty.
And they say it so much.
They curse like, a lot.
Like, they say it, but they say it like, you know that uncomfortable feeling when, like, the teenager finally can say fuck for the first time, and they like, have to, like, enunciate it, and it feels awkward like you're saying it when you shouldn't be saying it, and it's still a bad word. Yeah, that's what it's like on this. Nobody is comfortable in their own skin. The acting is terrible. It's definitely of the era of DC, everything has to be dark or darker. Yeah. Like, it's just not very good. I have no idea what universe it takes place in. It's really dumb.
So it doesn't take place in the DC cinematic universe.
$1 million.
Which we don't even know what that is anymore.
Well, which to my what I was alluding to before, James Gunn, they asked him like where Suicide Squad fits, and he's like, it's in the same universe as Aquaman and The Flash. He's like, I don't really know, but it's there.
Joker was in the end of Suicide Squad, so I mean not Suicide Squad, the end of the Justice League, the Snyder version.
It was a different Joker.
I want to be very clear.
That was a Joker that was. Yeah, okay.
I want to be very clear that I do think the Snyderverse is not dead, and I think it's coming back.
Oh, it can't be dead, dude. It did what it was meant to do, and I think because of that, there is still a DCEU, like with the Flash movie that's coming out, which is going to be Flashpoint, like with Aquaman 2, and good on Jason Momoa for being like, yeah, if you guys want to put it on HBO, that's cool, but fuck you, pay me.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, there's going to be a lot of contract renegotiations, because I don't really see, another little sidebar here, the cinema being the go-to spot for movies anymore. I think the dam is busted and you can't put that water back in.
Just like the problem right now with businesses, that businesses have with getting people to go back in the office.
Yeah.
I feel like the same thing is going to be with movies. Like it's not like concerts or look, the streaming concert experience that we've had for the last year is fun for a little bit, but it's not how I want to experience music.
Yeah.
Going to wrestling is still one of the greatest experiences. It's so hell different yeah. than being wrestling on the TV, even though that's always been there too. But movies, I'm sorry. Nowadays, we all have a 65-inch TV, and most of us have a nice sound bar or a surround sound system. Like, that's normal. And the terrible movie watch experience where you have people just talking through movies, and it's just all I miss is the universal reaction. Like if it's a major moment and there's that pop in a theater, but I won't lie, I'd rather have like 10 people show up in my basement. We'll watch it on our big screen, like theater thing that I have. Like I have no problem with us, like me popping with you and a couple other guys than I do being in a movie theater. It's just that experience isn't something I long for. I know people do. Some people do. But I also feel like you can't put the genie back in the bottle.
You can't. But that's the thing, dude. I miss it. I mean, I miss going to concerts. I think the things I miss the most, I miss going to concerts. But, dude, I loved going to the movies. I was an AMC, like, A-list premier member, dude. I was able to go see, like, 12 movies a month. And I did. I saw a lot of movies in the theaters because it was like, yo, I got nothing to do tonight. I'm just going to fuck off to the theater and I'll go see a movie. And you get that. There's a certain endorphin pop that you get just from being in the theater, the smell of the popcorn, all that bullshit. Like, I miss that. But at the same time, yo, the other night when we were watching Suicide Squad, I got the soundbar on, I got the subwoofer on, and Sally looks over at me. She's like, this is awesome. She's like, I get why you got the soundbar. And I was like, yes, exactly, because also I can hear things now. But, like, it was also nice to be able to be like, oh, I got to pee. Pause.
There's that, but there's also the fact that
not getting COVID?
The people, there's COVID. We're just going to ignore that first. We're going to put a pin on that because we're vaccinated, so it's less of a risk, but it's more of a risk for me with a kid than it is for you. The problem I have is that, so who is the target movie theater audience that exists right now? It's very old millennium, very millennial, very young Gen X. That's all that was going to the movies when the movies were popular. Movies were not doing well. We've talked about this prior to the movie thing going down. You're now adding, all right, young millennials, Generation Z, not going to the movies at all, no interest whatsoever. Then you have the fact that Gen X people with kids aren't going to the movie theaters because you don't want to do date night if you have a kid at home that you could possibly get them sick. You've like really, pretty much the only people that would be going to the movies right now or who are excited for it to come back is you. You're the target audience. It's young Gen Xers. It's Gen Xers in general who are either single or have like a girlfriend or a wife and no kids. Like that's really the only target audience left right now.
But I ain't going back
for movies. And now I know. I'm not even saying you will go back.
But you know, even you know people who are in the same kind of boat as me, like we're just not going back. I mean, to the point where like companies are getting creative about it. Like you know, they may not have the streaming deal in place, but A24 is doing a like, hey, you want to watch The Green Knight
this week?
You know, we will do like two showings on such and such day. You pay $18. You can watch it at home for like, you can either watch it at this hour. Or you can watch it at this hour. And I think that's a pretty cool pay-per-view model to kind of give you a destination. Because not that I didn't appreciate HBO Max being like, hey, you could watch Suicide Squad for like the minute you wake up in the morning. Like, I like being like, all right, I know at this time of night, I have to go and I have to be here to watch this movie. And I think that's kind of cool because it does create a destination experience again.
And it also, there's also the fact that the studios actually get all the money. Yeah. All the money. So look, Green Knight looks fantastic. The reviews are really good. Early reviews are good. But, and I'm not going to say, because I jinxed myself with Free Guy, but I think Green Knight has way less of a chance of making the money even free, you know, I'm sorry. It's just, Green Knight is it's a niche. Yeah, A24 is a very targeted type of film. And, you know, people aren't going to the Claridge Cinema, which is where that would play, you know, to go see it.
Angelica. Yeah.
Angelica's, IFC, places like that would play this. So they stand to make way, like a fraction of what they could make in the movie theaters, even if it does well word of mouth. This is guaranteed one day. And you know what? Maybe in a week or two after it is in the cinema, it'll go back on some sort of platform that they do it. They have an app. They actually have an app. They got Apple TV, so it's a little bit easier to watch that. We don't have to watch it on your computer, but they get all the money. And I think that's the move right now. And because it's easy for a Disney or HBO Max to swing their dick because they have the ability to eat it with the subscribers. Because they are not being dumb. This is what happened to Netflix. This is what happened with Napster and all the streaming services. This is what happened to the record industry. We saw this. We've seen this dance before.
Yep.
You don't want to innovate. You're not going to survive. Sadly, it's the movie theaters who are going to have to eat it at some point. And again, I do feel there is room for them to scale down and be more experiential. But for the real estate purposes, just to afford that. But I feel that this, you're right, Pandora's out of the box, and there is no way, if you don't just try to adapt to what's happening right now, it's not going to go back to the way it was. And this doesn't look like it's ending. I want to say I don't see it ending anytime soon, especially with other variants coming that are going to be worse than what we have now, and without the company fucked up. That said, Free Guy, I eat my words, and Ryan Reynolds liked it because as I told you guys, I thought, you know, a lot of people were saying that Free Guy, I'm saying it right, it's Free Guy.
Free Guy.
Is going to be the barometer for how normal movies are going to do. And I wrote, this is not going to be the barometer, this is the sacrificial lamb, because this is the last Fox movie Disney held out. They're not putting it on demand. There is no way this movie is going to do as well as Suicide Squad or some of the other movies that came out. It's just not. It's not a known commodity. Somehow, it made $28 million the first weekend. Now, I fully believe that next weekend it's going to make next to nothing.
Probably.
Because that's what happened to Suicide Squad, Black Widow, and everybody else. The everyone who's willing to see it goes day one now, they're not going day three.
I mean, granted, I think the one misstep here is that you counted out Ryan Reynolds. Everyone loves Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah, but enough to go, like, more than Suicide Squad, that movie was really good. I did not at the time realize that Free Guy had gotten a really good certified on Rotten Tomato, and the fan meter was also very good. So it looks like this is a very good movie that we will see and review later on.
Yeah, I'll pay $20 for it when it hits Amazon.
Yeah, I mean, Disney didn't want to fuck with Ryan Reynolds. They've got enough problems with Scarlett Johansson, and Scarlett Johansson was done with her contract. Now they're dealing with Ryan Reynolds, who not only has he got a contract, but like they are like, I would not be shocked if Ryan Reynolds, and I've heard the rumors, it becomes the creative liaison for the X universe.
Oh, 100%.
You know, with what he's done for Deadpool. So they want to keep him happy. So they're doing the right thing. And I have a feeling that Ryan Reynolds is smart enough to say in 2 weeks, let's say next week, it nosedives and it makes $2 million, which is possible it might do.
Yeah.
Let's a week later put it out on HBO Max or Disney. Sorry, Disney.
No.
Oh, it's HBO Max.
Contractually, it goes to HBO Max first before it hits Disney.
But I could see Disney making some sort of deal where HBO Max doesn't charge for it. Yeah. So I don't know how that works out. Ignore everything I just said, but I feel like there is on demand. So there is
What I said. Yeah. Like, you know, I watched Fast 9 on Amazon. I paid $20.
Yeah, so there are avenues. There are ways to Fios very much is still doing on demand with new movies. So there are other avenues. I want to see that. I'm curious how that goes. And just because I'm going to plug it, Ryan Reynolds did like my post when I apologized afterwards.
Of course,
you did.
Your mea culpa was.
Oh,
well,
I had to, because like I felt like a douchebag. People did like it enough where I kind of felt bad if I pushed it out there. I'm glad it did well. But again, what could it have made if this was normal times? I don't know. Will we ever hit normal times? I don't know. I'm worried a little bit about Spider-Man right now.
That I think is going to be the real barometer.
Spider-Man stands to fuck up the entire MCU right now. Think about it. So they can do the Shang-Chi. I forget the name of that
Shang-Chi.
One. That's next. Yeah. That's fine. That's going to air. That's going to air 45 days, whatever. They've already said that. However, Sony appears to be scared shitless. They don't have a streaming platform.
Nope.
They have been pushing Venom and pushing Venom. I'm like, Venom is coming out in September. It is now locked in. They said just pushed it to October.
They're New Mutants in Venom.
They're New Mutants, but I feel like they don't have the balls to stand tall on Spider-Man. My concern is they push Spider-Man to May, and MCU has to move their entire thing because what happens in there happens in Doctor Strange later.
Yeah.
So they can't just say, okay, fine, move Spider-Man. We don't care. It's like whatever. It's No Way Home. This is literally going to have repercussions into what happens next. So they're going to have to move the entire MCU if they...
But
if
Venom doesn't really...
No, I'm not talking about Venom. I'm talking about Spider-Man.
Okay.
Venom got moved.
Okay.
Venom's getting New Mutant.
Yeah.
Sony is now New Mutant every single one of their titles. What stops them from New Mutanting Spider-Man?
So I think because they're doing Shang-Chi, Shang-Chi in theaters, Spider-Man, knowing that they are on an actual timeline now, because Black Widow was an aberration. Black Widow.
Correct.
They could sandwich in some stuff there to tie into what's happening now, but like, Black Widow is a character that was already dead, and...
We're not talking about Black Widow. We're talking about does Sony have the balls to put Spider-Man out when they had not had the balls to put anything else out?
Well, no, this is what I'm getting to. Mm-hmm. It's Sony and Marvel together. And because it ties into what's going to happen next in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, they have to put it out.
Do they? I've heard people don't know.
I think they have to put it out.
I heard that because when the contract was re-signed with Tom Holland and all that stuff, that was prior to COVID.
I know, but I think that this is the exception and not the rule.
We'll see.
Because Venom can get pushed because Venom is still just really a Sony property.
Absolutely. It's just like Black Widow. It just floats.
It just kind of floats. But Spider-Man, so if they're doing a thing to try to see if they're going to make money in the theaters, it's Spider-Man. Like if you're talking about something that's actually going to put asses every 18 inches... no disrespect to Ryan Reynolds, Free Guy is awesome, but I'm sure it's fucking Spider-Man. Like, it's not going to be Black Widow, it's not going to be Shang-Chi, it's not going to be, like, whatever else, Fast 9, it's not going to be any of these other fucking movies, it's Spider-Man.
Assuming Venom does not tie into the new Spider-Man movie, which nobody has said it will, if they move Venom again, do you take back your words on this one?
I'm telling you, Spider-Man's going to come out when it's supposed to come out. It's going to come out when it's supposed to come out, or maybe it gets bumped by like 3 months.
Nope. That's May. Then we're doing what I'm talking about. Then you bump the entire Marvel universe.
Then I think it's going to come out. It's got to come out. They need it to come out.
We need it to come out.
Well,
we need it to come out. Sony has not pulled the trigger on anything. Everything's been bumped out of existence.
Yeah, because it's not Spider-Man.
Made any money. How, like, I don't even get what's going on with Sony right now, regardless. Anyway, that is something to think about, though.
Yeah.
Because when I saw Venom, I'm like, oh boy, that's not good for Spider-Man, and that's not good for MCU.
And to be clear, it's not getting New Mutants because it's a crap movie. I'm very confident this new Venom is going to be really good.
Hey, you know my feelings for Venom.
I know. I'm going to rewatch the first one before I watch the second one. I'm very confident.
Wait, why are we? Okay, so also, let's apologize. We're using New Mutants knowing that New Mutants is Fox. Not Sony. We realize that it's a different studio. Sony just hasn't released anything, and they keep bumping everything, and I just feel like they don't have a plan B, and again, everything ties into Spider-Man, and everything after Spider-Man is post, you know, it all has to do with the multiverse. So they can't just say, Marvel can't release Doctor Strange if Spider-Man hasn't come out yet.
Yeah, I think Spider-Man's come. Hello, both kitties. I think Spider-Man's coming out. I think that it'll be fine in theaters, and we'll see it 45 days later on Disney Plus. But I think that if you're talking about something that's going to have the leverage and the juice to get people in the theaters, it's going to be Spider-Man.
I don't disagree with you. I agree with that 100%. I just don't have faith in Sony. It's basically what this comes down to.
Yeah.
You're looking at my cats like you're terrified.
No, I'm not. I'm looking because I never see the one. I only see the other.
Oh, Penelope's out. Penelope's our Bengal, and Penelope doesn't really like humans too much.
No.
And she just, ever since we had Gabe, she's just like, leave me alone. She'll come out every now and then for food. And I think they're looking for food right now. I think they're out of food upstairs.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Stargirl a little bit.
Stargirl was great. Stargirl, I will still maintain, it is the best show that they've produced for the Berlantiverse. It started out on DC streaming. It got bumped to...
What's the Berlantiverse?
The Berlantiverse is the Arrowverse. It's Arrow, Flash, now Supergirl, Superman, and Lois.
Just for those of us that don't know.
Black Lightning. I mean, there was a lot of shows for it. Legends of Tomorrow, all culminating in the Crisis on Infinite Earths, which did show all the different worlds, like the Doom Patrol world, the Titans world, the Stargirl world. So they are in the universe, but not in the same universe. Stargirl takes place in a small town. She moves there with her mom, her stepbrother, and her stepfather, who used to be a superhero. Sidekick back in the day, she discovers the cosmic rod, in this case it's the cosmic staff, and she becomes the new Stargirl and fights the Injustice Society while recruiting a new Justice Society. So this takes place directly after season one ends. She's also a high school kid, so this is her having to go to summer school while being Stargirl, while a new Injustice Society rises up. So this is really contingent on you having seen the first season. However, I was concerned and curious because this was one of the shows that came out as a launch title for the DC streaming universe along with Swamp Thing. These are shows that they put movie-level money into making, and I was very curious to see the quality level because, and not to diminish the shows in the Berlantiverse on the CW, however, the budget is a little bit, it's a TV budget versus what you'd see for a movie. So I haven't heard as much music they've gotten clearance for. However, it looks, feels, and has the same aesthetic as it did when it was on the DC streaming. So I was very pleased to see that. The story is still solid. She's still trying to rebuild the Justice Society. And, you know, they're doing a good job about building that specific corner of the DC universe. The acting in it is very good. It's got the other Wilson brothers. It's got Luke Wilson in it, Amy Smart in it as well.
I believe you called him your preferred Wilson brother.
He's my preferred Wilson brother. And I will tell you that for fans of the Justice Society, for fans of the David Robinson Starman run, for fans of that little nook in the DC comics universe, there's a lot of really nice Easter eggs, a lot of fan favorite stuff in there. A lot of like things that if it really goes the way I think it's going to go, it's going to make a lot of old comic fans pop while being something that's really good for new fans. So it's only got one season. It's a 13 episode first season. Season two is only going to be 13 episodes. So it's still kind of accessible for people to jump into and to enjoy and watch. It's not like I'm going to try to make you watch 15 seasons of Supernatural at 22 episodes a piece. So I think if you're going to give one of these superhero shows a shot, Stargirl should be the one.
So I watched an episode.
What'd you think?
The first episode of the new season. And I was like, I'm just going to go in cold and see how people feel. Just how feel. Just like, you know, I'm in the pool.
Yep.
Is it cool? Is it warm? Is it hot? Is it salted? I don't know. I'm here to test drive it.
Yep.
Here to test drive it. I'm bothered by the fact that she wears Captain Marvel's outfit. Like Captain America meets Captain Marvel. Like I'm bothered Fair. A little bit about the outfit. That threw me a little bit. Yeah, I was like, oh, it's a little strange. Whatever. I found the acting in this show to be 1,000 times better than the acting in Titans.
Oh, yeah.
Like, nothing took me out of the storyline. I found this first episode to be very slow.
It was very slow. And I think that's my one point of contention with it, is that it does very much rely on you having seen the first season, because it starts out with a whimper and ends with a bang. And I think that's the best way I could describe this episode.
And I was getting a little confused with like Injustice Societies and Justice Leagues and Injustice Leagues and Justice of something. I didn't know who any of these characters were.
Yeah.
Like I felt like this was the Guardians of the Galaxy of the DC universe. And
well, the Justice Society was actually the World War II version of the Justice League. They actually fought Hitler and helped end World War II. However,
that's nice of them.
It was very, very kind of them to do. However, the Spear of Destiny kind of shot them off into their own. It split the world. So that's why the Justice Society was always from a different Earth than the Justice League. They were from the original Earth, Earth 1 Justice League. Main Justice League was from Earth 2. And they would always do a thing every like Thanksgiving where the two would cross over and have like Thanksgiving dinner together. It was very nice. However, this, again, there's no real rhyme or reason to the DC universe, so just know that this is in the CW Berlanti verse now, and I'm sure it's going to cross over soon. But yeah, man, acting is good on it, stories are good on it, and it's a lot of fun. It's a light show until it needs to get heavy.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm going to continue watching it, but I do recommend this more than Titans. And you know, so we are speaking of Nazis. I saw Final Account, Remember we talked about a few weeks ago, the documentary where they interview like the Germans, like the SS, like the last remaining SS and German people, like the people who were there, the people who ran the camps. And it is a disturbing, strange, it's an account. It's just literally interviews with these people who either, you know, were related to or family members of, or were actually people who guarded death camps and helped, were full on SS members. And it just runs the gamut of like there are people in this who like full on were like, I did nothing wrong. I just was proud to be a follower of Hitler and everything we did was for the fatherland. And I'm just like, dude.
Still.
Wow. Still. Like I am like, this was the right thing for Germany. And then there was like one guy, they interviewed him and they're like, well, you know, they killed like 6 million Jews or whatever. I'm blanking on the number right now, but I think it was around that mix of people. And he's like, no, that number isn't realistic. I was there at the camps. I've put them in the ovens. Like,
he said that?
It couldn't have been more than like maybe a million around the world.
Like casually.
And, like, just, and then there's other people who break down crying. They're like, we did atrocities. Like, this is horrible.
Yeah, you like, should all cry. And then there You're
was,
all bad.
And then there were other people who were just like, I had no idea that what we were doing was leading to something else, which is, you know, look, I'm very much understand that there are soldiers. And then there are fucking horrible people who like run death camps.
Yeah.
Like there are people who are on the front line fighting Americans who have no idea what's going on in the rest of the world. Like I fully understand that. But like, no, these are the horrible people. These are the people who were like full, but they're like low enough rank where they didn't get hung in Nuremberg or wherever. Like these aren't like the capos.
I think these are like the camp.
These are the guys like guarding the camp, like ushering the people into the gas chambers.
You know, they weren't teaching archery at that camp or doing underwater basket weaving. So fuck all those guys.
Obviously don't recommend this movie for you.
Yeah.
But if you are obviously a historian and you want to, I mean, talk about just like the final account, you know, you talk about how, you know, obviously we need to talk to as many Holocaust survivors as possible because everybody's getting old.
Yeah.
And I've personally met Holocaust survivors. We've had them at school. You know, I know family members, friends of family members who have gone through it. So, those accounts, you know, people are very smart that we need to get those stories. This is the first time, and I never thought, like, this is the other side. Like, you also need to know the stories of the fuckers that, like, were, you know, or you're doomed to repeat it. And again, some of these were just like, it was just like really, really dark. And again, there isn't a ton of B-roll. You're not seeing, it's not just a ton of footage of people being, it's just interviews. And some of it's just so, so wrong. And again, there are people who are literally crying and upset because they know what it's led to. But the ones where it's just like no empathy and they're like still like Hitler was right. Like, and these are, there is actually one poignant scene where they have one of these gentlemen who I believe was SS, like pretty high ranking SS. He knew what was going on. He feels horrible for what was going on. But they have him sit down with a whole bunch of neo-Nazis. Like today, and he's confronting them and he's just like, what you're talking about is insane. Like I lived through this. I did this stuff and I do not agree with anything. Like you're a bunch of stupid kids. Like you have no fucking idea what you're talking about. And they're like, just like completely writing him off. Cause they can't obviously like they respect him quote unquote because of what he was. He's like, you guys are fucking nuts. Like, this is like nuts that you who are like, what are you like 20 years old? What do you know about like the Third Reich and like what we went through and the horrible things we did and how horrible we feel about what we did? It was a mind fuck. It was an insane documentary. So
yeah.
If you're into history, Josh Goldfarb would love this.
Yeah. Well, fuck all those dudes and the horse they rode in on. Fuck one of them and every member of their bloodline.
Final account. Definitely, especially if you're a World War II nut or anything like that, definitely check it out. Definitely a different tale than what I'm used to from seeing lots of Saving Private Ryan's and documentaries on all that stuff. And I grew up, just so you know, you might not know this, but I was a Holocaust studies minor in Montclair State University.
Oh, no shit.
Yes,
but
I was very fascinated with journalism during World War II and what was covered and what wasn't. So I did a lot of theses on basically like the New York Times not covering enough of it because they didn't want to seem too Jewish, whereas like the Brooklyn Eagle had like literally new, like we're writing about death camps every day and nobody paid any attention to it because it was like a local newspaper versus like, so anyone who said that Americans didn't know what was happening there, I found so much coverage of it over here. It just wasn't in the national publications.
You know, it's funny because I was actually talking to our friend Josh today about the new replacements. 40th anniversary of Sorry Mom, I Forgot to Take Off the Trash. And this is actually going somewhere, folks. And I was like, yeah, man, 40 years ago, Sorry Mom came out. You feel old? And he's like, well, I feel old by like all of these records, all my favorite records. He goes, man, The Outcome of the Wolves is 26 years old. And I said, yeah, that's 1 year shy of Leonardo DiCaprio not being willing to date it. But I was like, you know, we are 10 years away, give or take, from people in this country being old and not old enough to give any kind of a shit about World War II or Pearl Harbor.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we you know, taught growing up in school, remember Pearl Harbor and all this other shit. You know, 9/11 is still looming large as a specter over the entire country, but mostly more than anything the Northeast, especially New York, New Jersey, because this is the 20th anniversary of 9/11. But it's been a fucking minute since Pearl Harbor. And I think a lot of the people who were alive or old enough to know and give a shit about it, they're either going to be dead or they can't be bothered because we still have 9/11 only being 20 years away.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's why I've been frustrated all this week with the Afghanistan stories, because I have a lot of friends at work who were former Marines that were in Afghanistan and Iraq. And just like, I literally wrote to my friend Lauren, I'm just like, I feel so, like, I cannot imagine what you feel right now, knowing that we pulled out of Afghanistan and everything your friends all died for.
Yeah.
Literally just, oh, here, you can have it back. Enjoy. We fucked up. Go ahead. Like, I can't imagine what these people think. And yeah, we're only 20 years out from that, even though, you know, for like, there's a whole generation of kids now that have no idea, like, no idea. But we're not going to go, we're now going weird down.
Yeah, we're
going
on a weird tangent. I will just say this, though.
Okay.
I think, you know, I've said this in previous episodes, it's so important that survivors of the Holocaust stories are told, and I think it's so important that their children and others around them continue to tell these stories, because there should never be a point in any of our histories where we forget such an atrocity happened. You know, like, look, people are going to really, they're going to forget World War II, they're going to forget Pearl Harbor, right? But they should never forget what happened in all those camps. And also, once again, fuck all those guys and the horse they rode in on. Every one of those dickheads. Anyway, let's go back to the fun.
Well, I had a really good transition, but you like really screwed me up when you kept going dark, because I was gonna say let's talk about music, since you were talking about the new replacements box set. I was gonna transition to Joey Cape. However, I do want to say one thing though, that like it mind fucks me and Allison big time. Like I particularly went to a multicultural school growing up.
Right.
And I still think it's mind-boggling that I didn't know about the Tulsa riots.
Oh, yeah.
Until I watched Watchmen. Yeah. And I feel like most of us middle-aged white people had no idea. Like, absolutely no idea. And I don't even know about, like, localized black friends. Like, I haven't asked, like, Harvey or anyone if they knew about it. Because, like, I just don't know, like, based on where we're located and the fact that, like, textbooks didn't give a shit about black history other than, like, Martin Luther King. Whether that, like, that I cannot, and to this day, especially now that it's become such a thing and we're celebrating Tulsa, we're celebrating in a bad, you know, obviously remembering, not celebrating, I apologize. But, you know, we're being very sensitive about this type of history. Like, to think prior to 2 years ago, I didn't know about it.
No.
I didn't know about it. I think we talked about it on that episode when we watched the first episode of Watchmen. Like, it blows my mind. It blows my mind that it took a TV show about superheroes, which ties back into what we do, for us to even fucking know about this, like, horrible, like, slaughter of people. And again, it goes to what you say. It's not just the history that we know to forget. It's trying to uncover the history that we should know, but we were basically, like, whitewashed, literally, growing up about.
Well, American history that's taught in public schools during our generation
sucked.
It went from the Civil War to Martin Luther King, and they just kind of glazed over everything that happened in between. So, yeah, I mean, I saw that, and I was like, man, that was crazy.
Skipped over the Indian genocide. American Indian genocide, completely just not even.
That didn't happen, according to the textbooks.
It was pilgrims, and no, you're right. And that's why I hated American history. I was never a fan of American history. I always loved world history was always my favorite because I like the wars and all that. You know, we'll talk about that because it doesn't make us look bad.
Well, yeah, I mean, how do you expect your children to grow up patriotic when you tell them that we're really the dickheads, you know? Anyway.
Joey Cape has a new album and aptly fit. I mean, I'm very good now at looking to see what is. We went dark, not even dark. We just went too serious for a sec before going into.
The word you're looking for is poignant.
I've had such a miserable day at work today that I am just. I'm just surly and nothing having to do with my job, but just the surrounding bullshit that goes into what I do for a living. But the album by Joey Cape is A Good Year to Forget. And what an apt title.
Such an apt title. I love this album. I really did enjoy it. But I had a couple thoughts like right off the bat.
Go ahead. Joey Cape, lead singer of Lagwagon, solo project. He's been doing this for a while. Singer, songwriter, acoustic stuff, very dad rock. Take it away.
It's interesting because when he does this vocally, right? As I'm listening to this, I'm like, is this the new Sebadoh album? Because it's very reminiscent of Lou Barlow and Lou Barlow's more quiet version of Sebadoh. And then as I'm listening to it more, I'm like, wow, Lagwagon really is just Death Cab for Cutie slowed down, you know? And that's not a knock. It's not a knock, but like when you really listen to it and you listen to the arrangements on this album, you're like, wow, it's like if you know, they had like slower arrangements and like not naughty lyrics, and this is like what you have.
Well, you know that when you hear things like when he does violins and when he does Wind Beneath My Sails.
Yeah.
Like you hear when he does do the occasional Lagwagon cover, you realize that this is really, you know, just punk rock slowed down. And you realize, I've realized that for years when Greg Graffin did American Legion, we reviewed the reissue recently, like he writes Bad Religion songs on a piano and acoustic guitar, and that's the original arrangement. So he can easily turn a Bad Religion song into an acoustic song. I feel that same thing here with Joey Cape. I, however, am not the biggest Lagwagon fan.
Oh, nor am I.
And I got to be honest with you, Joey Cape's voice has never appealed to me. It's a little bit of an acquired taste. I've never been a fan of that more whiny, and I don't want to call his vocals whiny, but there is that nuance to his voice, the fat record sound, so to speak, yeah, that I have never loved. But I did enjoy his first split with the Tony Sly, and I enjoyed acoustic too. This one I feel is more of a cohesive acoustic album in the vein of like a Greg Graffin, in the vein of a Chuck Reagan, obviously not the same vocal style and musical arrangements. It's definitely more guitar and vocal, but I feel like this is him fully like, I am dad rock.
Yeah, I agree. And I don't think that's a bad thing.
I don't think it's a bad thing.
I think that there is a very distinct line between songwriters and punk bands who can go and step outside themselves and the role that they play in a punk band and put together a really great sounding and very like well written acoustic style album versus the guys that you're like, wow, they're just like playing that song on an acoustic guitar and it sounds bad because there's no distortion. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like there's a very like jerky kind of, you know, so you're doing the song acoustically, but you're not trying to, I don't want to say re-envision or reimagine it, just, I don't know, play a full chord when you do it. Like, you're just essentially playing the same thing. Like, you know, a good example of that, I think, is like when you heard the acoustic version of Everlong by the Foo Fighters, right? Where it sounds a very specific way when it's played full band, whereas when it's done acoustic, you actually see like there's a lot more dynamic to it. And I think that Joey Cape does a great job finding that balance of where, you know, you're still hearing all the things that you love about Lagwagon and the other projects that he's done while still doing a very like honest and earnest sounding dad rock album, which is like, I'm shocked that it took someone this long to come out with an album called A Year to, you know, whatever. And like to really like kind of be open and talk about the kind of isolation and, you know, complete like emptiness that came from all of like existing in all of last year, because a lot of people who put albums out now and they're kind of referencing last year, they're kind of like trying to put a positive spin on it. This feels a little more honest to me.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I feel like we said this a lot more of these albums are going to come. Like, I feel like that was what Billy Joe Armstrong put out. Except his was more, you know, obviously cover songs. But I feel like we are going to have an entire year. I think 2021 is going to be a lot of singer-songwriter stuff. There's no way around it. Like, that's what is going to come out, with the exception of Iron Man, which I can't wait to review it. It is what it is. Again, this is not my preferred type of music.
No.
I think Chuck Reagan is probably the most I can handle. Tim Barry does nothing for me, too, and I love Avail. And I also find it amazing that this is also on Fat Record, which seems to be what we largely review. You know, for someone, I say a lot how much I'm not the biggest NoFX fan, but God, do I like, we review a lot of Fat Record stuff.
I mean, they're constantly putting out stuff and they're putting out quality stuff. So what can I say?
Next week, Quicksand. We're going to do the new Quicksand album. Just realized that came out this week too.
Very exciting.
What do you, I look again, if you, I don't like recommending music because either you like this type of music. I mean, unless it's absolutely terrible. This is obviously a style of music that appeals to a certain type of person. If you like Greg Raffin solo stuff, if you love Frank Turner and you love Chuck Reagan, if you love Tim Barry, I think this is worth checking out. If you like Lagwagon, you'll probably love this. So definitely give it a spin.
I mean, the Lagwagon fans have definitely aged into the demographic that would love this album. So, like, I think you will really get a kick out of it.
Yeah, let's talk about The Mummy.
I am so excited about The Mummy.
We have 10 minutes because I need to eat.
That's okay.
Let's talk about The Mummy and why all of a sudden you want to talk about them. Because The Mummy is one of my least favorite, like,
really?
Like, giant adventure. I feel like The Mummy was the precursor to DC movies.
I disagree with that.
And The Scorpion King that followed it.
The Scorpion King was mostly just to get The Rock in a movie. But let's be real about this. So Brendan Fraser, I've always loved Brendan Fraser. I will watch him in anything he's in, Airheads, whatever, like, you know, just like he's a great, like, action guy actor who's now like a real serious actor. His life did take some turns because he did speak out against an agent who groped him. And he kind of got blacklisted in Hollywood for a while. And, you know, he got injured doing a stunt and, you know, he was just in kind of a bad spot. But now, like, he's so grateful and gracious for being able to be like welcomed back into Hollywood, doing some great roles. No Sudden Move with Don Cheadle on HBO Max. Can't get away from HBO Max. The Doom Patrol, also on HBO Max. Can't get away from you there either. But, you know, one of my favorite action movies of all time, and I hadn't really watched it in a while, was The Mummy. And for those listening at home who might have not seen The Mummy or The Mummy Returns, Brendan Fraser is a kind of like a down-on-his-luck soldier, adventurer, who kind of gets wrapped up in this whole thing where these other archaeologists kind of are going to uncover the tomb of Imhotep, and wackiness ensues, and it takes place in the desert. But, I mean, this was like the first real action-style movie in this vein since Indiana Jones and The Last Crusade. Now, this came out in the year...
Sorry, God.
But you know what I mean? Like, Indiana Jones is a very specific kind of action movie.
I mean, there is also the National Treasure.
That came out after.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. Yep. I'm not going to argue that. You know your fun action adventure movies more than I do.
But this was like the first new era one, you know, that wasn't done by Spielberg. And, you know, it is, for all intents and purposes, like a Dungeons and Dragons movie, because you have every class represented and it is an adventure. But it's got romance, it's got like great action in it, it's got, you know, this was like the first real movie that was heavy CGI and new generation CGI, which what I will say to our listeners, I watched it on 4K. I rented it off of Amazon in 4K, and you know, 4K does show you some of the warts and all that comes with early 2000 special effects, but nonetheless, I mean, it's still a great story from front to back. It's a 2-hour movie. It's a little bit on the long side, but it doesn't feel like a 2-hour movie. It feels like a really fun adventure with really rich characters that you're happy to see come back in sequels.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, you know, with all the goodwill happening for and all the love being shown to Brendan Fraser, I would mention that if you haven't seen The Mummy in a long time, rent it.
But he's a terrible actor.
He's not a terrible
actor.
He is not a terrible
actor.
He is
so not a good actor. Name me another good Brendan Fraser movie. Encino Man.
There was several that
PCU?
I can't.
PCU? Was he in PCU?
No, that was Jeremy Piven.
Same shit.
He is not a bad actor. You know, I mostly
he's like the Foo Fighter of actors.
There's nothing wrong with the Foo Fighter. Foo Fighter's like the Nickel,
he's like the Nickelback of actors.
Now you are just being insulting. Now you're just trying to be surly, George.
The Mummy is, first of all, the Mummy in general is the most boring, like, creature feature, period.
I horribly disagree.
Oh my God, I'm a creature wearing toilet paper.
He was not a creature wearing toilet paper in these movies. He's the Mummy, and it was
the Mummy. Do you know Gabe calls zombies mummies? He calls Plants vs. Zombies the Mummy game, which is one of his favorite games, by the way.
I mean, you know, he's not incorrect. Zombies are mummies, and mummies
are just like, they're just, I don't even know. I just don't like, I don't know. I am so, there's so many things that bother me here right now. Like, Brendan Fraser's not a good actor. You can't name another good movie. You actually stopped just now before you could. I stopped you at PCU, and you're looking up, you're trying to find.
I'm trying to find the name of a movie.
Scrolling through his IMDb, and you can't find anything.
Well, because I'm trying to talk to you at the same time.
He's not a great actor. I'm not making fun of you for being on your phone.
I know that, but I mean, like, you got me. I forgot the name of the movie that I wanted to reference, and I'm looking it up on the IMDb.
But you still can't find it, and we're 5 minutes in, so clearly it doesn't exist.
The file is really small.
You were like thinking...
It's hard for me to see.
You are actually... I just want you to admit you're the person adding all the torture porn to my Plex.
I'm not. I didn't even know where the shit that's... I didn't even know it was there. Listen, you know what I can watch on your Plex? I watch Rick and Morty. That's like, I get on and like, I check out what horror movies we have to watch out for the week and see what I see there, see what I have to watch.
I mean, so just so everybody knows why he's still looking for this Brendan Fraser.
I gave up.
You've never found it.
No, I just.
There isn't a single other good Brendan Fraser movie.
You gotta eat dinner. We got 4 minutes left. There is, and I can't. Just go on, George.
Someone on my play, we have a joint Plex, all legal, by the way. All obviously on the up and up. But we have a Plex, and all of a sudden someone added like the most. Like the faces of death of modern torture porn onto my thing. And I think someone's trolling me and I can't find out who, but
change the password.
So I started,
change the password.
I got to retell you all the passwords. I just can't remember that. I don't care enough. It's not like they're putting porn on it. It's whatever. However, I've started watching some of it.
Of course you did.
I got to tell you, The Collector, the first movie in the Collection series was actually very good, and I highly recommend it to you. Like, I actually am saying it to you as a person who likes horror. The Collector was very, very good. It's a reverse take on Saw, where there's this guy who has to like support his family. He needs to come up with money very quickly. He's a contractor working on some really rich guy's house, and he breaks in to steal the guy's whatever. He's trying to steal stuff to get money. And when he breaks in, this house is being, he's a contractor because this house was just flipped, and maybe it was once a haunted house.
Oh no.
Maybe the former owner was a Saw type jigsaw guy.
Uh-oh.
And well, he breaks in and he is like tricked his house out back at, like when the guy breaks in to steal the stuff, he finds his house has been turned into like a giant Saw situation. But it's like a house of it, and he's got to get through it. And it is actually a really cool take on that type of a Saw type movie. It's not that, it's no worse than what we saw in the last Saw, that new, the Chris Rock one. But there's also a sequel called The Collection, which I hear is very good. And then there's a third part called The Collected, which is like stuck in COVID limbo and may never happen. Now I'm annoyed because I hear the last one ends in a cliffhanger.
Yeah, it sucks.
Anyway, I don't recommend The Mummy to anybody.
Highly recommend.
I don't recommend Brendan Fraser. I will just put it out there that in the 1.5 minutes left, my co-host failed to name another Brendan Fraser
Crash
movie.
Like, he's great in that.
Crash, was he? What was he in Crash?
I don't know, man. I just can't.
Was he really in Crash? Yes. Or you just put that out there.
No.
The movie or the TV show?
Man, I just go home, man.
Oh my God. No. I'm sorry. I'm taking this. This is actually really engaging, hilarious. And I know at least one person right now is going to be laughing, except I can't spell Brendan Fraser's name. Guys, how can the kids reach you?
Oh, wait, Jesus Christ.
Let's stop for a second. You just handed me.
Oh,
my copy
I did.
Of 3-2-1 Action's Rocket to Russia. This is a very, very lovely Digest style with a, I must say, a very nice prestige-bounded booklet format zine with some great cards. This is my Kickstarter. I appreciate you dropping it off for me.
Of course, because I sent the original one media mail because we sent everyone media mail, but apparently they got to California before they got to town away.
I don't know what to tell everybody other than media mail kind of sucks, but it is out there, I believe. So you fulfilled all your contractual obligations?
We did. So there are the only thing still left, there are some people who obviously, like, they haven't picked a day to have me run the game for them.
You mean like me?
Well, but that's okay, though, because it's summer and you want to do stuff while we can still go outside. But yeah, I mean, I'm going to keep that open for like a year or two. Like, you have like a couple of years to get back to me and have me run a game for you. If you paid for it, I'm happy to do it. You know, we're in the process of getting the next Kickstarter ready. We're going to be doing a Kickstarter for Point Nemo in October, which is 2 years later from the events that happened in Rocket to Russia, which is the story that I originally set out to write when I started doing this, but we got sidetracked just trying to do a zine that ended up being 99 pages.
So it's a book.
It's a book. It's not a zine anymore. It's a full book. It's a perfect bound book. But yeah, we're in the process of doing that. So the other thing is certain people on the tiers, they're going to get previews as it's being made.
You know how you know it's a book and not a zine? You have a title on the binding.
I have the title on the binding, yeah. So, you know, so you're going to get, people are going to get previews, but all the physical stuff and all the PDFs have been sent out. The audiobook has been released, so it's everywhere. You can, you want a PDF copy, you could check out 321actiongames.com. There's a link to where you can buy the PDF. We're just waiting on a finalized date, but you will be able to order physical copies very soon from Exalted Funeral. And, you know, I love the digest-sized books, especially for game books. So, I mean, unless something changes, all the action books, the horror books, everything we're going to put out is going to come out digest-sized.
Yeah, love it. Love it, love it, love it. That's what Life in a Bungalow used to be, digest-sized. The thing is, when we do our game, I'm trying to find the ultimate group of people to be a part of it. Because, like, look, I'm not just going to invite our friends. I'm going to find the people, the secret RPG people in my life who have not said they are, but I know they are, like Michael Dolan.
I was going to say, get Dolan.
Like Michael Dolan, my producer on George Talks Tech, Aaron, is a closet D&D player. Like, I need to find the people who I'm friends with, who I trust, and who would spread the gospel of this after they play.
Appreciate
it, man. So that's what I'm trying to do, and also I have time, and you're also like my best friend and show up here every week. So how can the kids reach you?
You can find me on the Twitter and on Instagram at John McGuire RPG. I will be putting up pictures and promoting more because I have something to promote now. Also, I put up pictures of my sailing trip, which I just had over the weekend, so that's pretty fun, on Instagram at John McGuire RPG. Where can people find George?
You guys can reach me at GLK Creative on Twitter, GLK Creative on Instagram, cultofgeorge.com is my blog. All our back episodes, all 225
wow
back episodes are on mytitv.com. Definitely rate, review, and subscribe. We will not have an episode next week.
Okay.
Because I will be on vacation and not over a period of time where it makes sense. And we will not have watched enough to justify doing one early. So, you know, there we go. So Quicksand will actually be the week afterwards there with whatever go. Else. And with probably Green Knight if we can watch it this Friday. I am psyched for everything going on. Everybody, please be safe.
Yeah.
Like, this stuff's weird right now. Like, it is weird. It's weird again. And, like, I'm just going to say it out right now. Like, everyone out there, if you haven't been vaccinated, you're kind of fucking it up for all of us. And we just kind of want to just go out and enjoy life again. So do us a favor. You know, if you've had COVID and you think that's an out, that's not an out.
Not an out.
If you have antibodies, guess what? Those go away. It's time to get vaccinated, people.
It really is.
Even if you don't like that. I don't like getting shots. I don't like it at all. I don't like getting my flu shot. I'm doing it because I have a 4-year-old and I don't want to pass anything to him.
Honestly, man, at this point, any kind of weird objection you have, unless you have, like, look, some people do have a medical reason that they can't do it.
Your doctor has to give you your fucking reason, not your brain.
Not YouTube.
Not the internet, not YouTube, not Twitter. It's got to be your doctor who says you have a fucking thing that will cause you injury.
If you have drank a Diet Coke, you shouldn't be worried about what's the
vaccination. If you want to get pregnant, you should get vaccinated. Like, there's nothing stopping anybody from getting vaccinated.
If you've taken a shit at CBGB's or in any public toilet, you shouldn't be worried about
shot.
You should get a tetanus shot.
Yeah.
But you should also get vaccinated. You shouldn't be worried about what's in the vaccine.
Yeah, if you have no problem giving giving blowjobs to guys who might not have washed, like, you're better off just getting vaccinated.
If you've ever stuck your finger in a bowling ball then ate in a buffalo wing at a bowling alley, just get a fucking vaccine.
If you've ever stuck your finger up John's asshole, you should get vaccinated.
George.
This is our PSA.
Jesus Christ,
that was
George.
A good one, though. That was
you went
one.
Really, really off the top. I don't even know. Take us home. No, I take us home.
Take
Everybody
us
remember,
home.
Be nice. Wear a fucking mask. Get vaccinated. Don't you made it weird. Aloha.